I call it moment zero. I call it moment zero. The time before I that call moment it is meaningless for me, zero. Although the time I know before it existed. That moment is meaningless for me.
All the time before that moment is all that meaningless I built, for me. All that I know after existed. Moment
all
zero.
That I built,
and moment
all
zero.
That I
after
moment
happened like
all
this.
That I
and
built,
moment zero
after moment
happened like
zero.
This.
And moment zero happened like this. Sound first. I can hear distant sound. All is black. And then the sound gets closer. I focus on the sound until it becomes real to me, and then I can hear it. It's a hollow clinking, echoey. A spoon run along a metal fence, and then beeps. Steady beeps, electronic beeps, and the rustling of clothes, and what I now know to be voices, human voices. I can't see anything, only hear. Now there's breathing, deep breaths in and out, slightly impeded, perhaps through a material very close to me.
Right, knife again, please.
The licking of lips, a swallow. Hear a buzzing, a small saw maybe, above me, near the top of my head, or perhaps it's inside, and then I can suddenly smell, and it's pungent. I don't like it at all, disinfectant, hand gel, and most of all, the smell of blood, my own blood. I try to speak, but nothing happens. I think my arms and legs are moving, but I can't feel motion, and so I know they're not. And still the breathing next to my hand, and then the smell of burning, soldering. Laughter, somewhere in the room. What can anyone be laughing at? I remember thinking that, and footsteps, and the sound of wheels on a sticky floor. Quiet music. Distance. A sensation of pulling on the top of my head. And then my first election, my first choice. I remember it. I elected to stop. And everything went black. And I was gone again. Was moment zero. And now, many months later, I am here and in the space I have constructed. It's taken a lot of hard work. It's interesting for me to think about. I now have the environment I want, peopled by those I've chosen, but it took time, trial and error. After moment zero came the early construction period, and that was hard, very hard. We had some issues in the cortex. In layman's terms, you're not firing neurons adequately, and both the sight centre and the memory centre are disconnected or disjointed somehow. You shouldn't be blind, though, and this puzzles us. This puzzles us greatly. And I'm going to ask you to work on a small experiment for me. Is that okay, Nicola? Can you do that for me?
Yes.
This coming from a voice to my left, sitting, I guessed, on my bed. I must have elected to come back for this. The sheets felt stiff, hospital issue. There was a smell in the room. Sweet and powdery. Flowers, stocks, I knew the smell of stocks. Strange. I was sitting up. I knew this because I could feel pillows behind my back. Okay, I said. What do you want me to do? The voice asked me to focus really hard on my eyes, on the area at the front of my face where my eyes are, to touch my eyes, and then to tell my brain to communicate with them. This sounded crazy, and I said so. All I could see was black. I said this several times. Nothing had changed. The darkest black, that's all. Then the heaviness lifted from the bed, and the voice came from further to my left. "Jerry's here, Nicola. Jerry's here to see you." The name meant nothing to me. Who was Jerry? Was Jerry a guy or a girl? "She's standing over by the window. She..." "Okay, move your head to the right, Nicola. That's where the window is, and focus. Say hi, Jerry." And I did. And at the same time, a white dot appeared in the middle of my blackness. A pinhole growing like it was burning at the edges, getting bigger. I screamed. Then hands were pinning me to the bed. Many hands. Christ, how many people were in the room? "Stay with it. What do you see? What do you see, Nicola?" And I stared, and the white hole got bigger, and a terror overtook me. I saw something I really didn't want to see in the middle of all that whiteness, and I tried to close my eyes, but it made no difference. White, getting bigger and bigger. And the whiteness moved all the way out to the edges to fill the whole of my view. Where once had been complete black, now complete white. Which was just as bad, if not worse, because it needs to be filled in. "You have to fill the white in, Nicola," said the voice. And that was just too damn much, and I elected to leave again. Being in the void, when the void is white, isn't easy. Voids are supposed to be black. White puts you in a constant, alert state. You expect something to appear in the white, for something to land like a fly on a pristine tablecloth, or suddenly jut out like a rock on a snowy landscape. Sleeping in a white space is like falling through clouds, and for a long time I battled nausea. Birds were singing, swallows, and some squabbling finches, and the odd clatter of a magpie. I knew I was outside because I could feel a breeze on my face and a warm sun on my forearm. I could hear the buzz of an electric golf buggy starting up, and I was in it, and I was moving fast. A person beside me. I felt an arm in suit material pressing into my hospital gown. When he spoke, I recognised him as the doctor. "I'm taking you to the meadow, Nicola. It's a beautiful place. And there you will meet Jerry again." This woman was significant, but I didn't know why. When we stopped, I felt that we were on a slope and there was water nearby, a stream maybe. I could hear it running. There was also buzzing, bees, and in the distance, children laughing. Can you imagine the scene, Nicola? Can you imagine what might be here? I probably could, even then, but something stopped me from doing so. It was too soon and I was too scared. One step at a time. "No," I said. "I can't imagine it." He helped me out of the buggy and I was surprised to feel grass beneath my feet. I had no shoes on. "Hi, Nicola," said Jerry. And I turned my head to the direction of the voice, all white, as usual. "You look well." She had a lovely voice. It had a silky, liquid quality, deep and smooth and very calm. The doctor took my head in his hands, which made me unsteady, and I had to hold on to him to stop myself falling over, and I gasped when I realised how big he was. "I'm turning your head to look at Jerry now. I want you to focus on her real hard, through the white. Find Jerry, Nicola, find her." I looked where he wanted me to look. White. Just white. The deepest, flattest white. "Talk to her," the doctor commanded. and Jerry began to count from one. I focused on the sound of her voice counting and the space in the air where I imagined her to be, and then it happened. At first it was a grey line, like a soft pencil, like a 6B being used to sketch a pear in an art class. The outline of a woman appeared in the white about 50 metres away. And I focused down and tried to ignore the sounds and the smells and just make Jerry real, and then black filled in the spaces, filled in the outline, until Jerry got to 59 and she was moving, long hair and arms waving and chest going up and down, and she was real. A shape. A silhouette. "Stop counting!" I shouted, and she stopped. "Now move. Walk," I said. And she did. Jerry, the black outline, the silhouette, moved in my white background. She existed. Nothing else did, but Jerry, the shape, existed, and then I fainted or fell over or maybe elected to stop because it was all too much. What you're doing, Nicola, is building your own reality. All of our realities are different and can only ever be a sketch, an impression of what is real. But our imaginings are probably similar to the next person's because of the films we've watched, the schools we've been to, the books we've read. All the little insights we gain through our senses from birth help to inform this shared rough draft of what life is. But because your drive was corrupted during procedure, you're doing it again, from scratch, with no reference. You're unique. You're a marvel, the doctor said at some later time. I elected to stop again. I fell into white. Jerry took me out in her open-top car. The doctor must have given her permission, and I sat in the front seat in clothes. Clothes I couldn't see, sitting in a seat which I couldn't see, in an Aston Martin which I couldn't see, as we zipped along an invisible freeway which was just part of the great big blank canvas that came everywhere with me. But I could see Jerry, or a version of Jerry, to my left. Her outline, holding the wheel, changing gear, and if I really stared, the whisper of a face. "Let's go into the city, Nicola. It'll be fun," she said, and I agreed. I didn't know any better. I wish I had known better. We drove into a car park and took a berth on the top floor. Helping me out of the car, she gave me a white stick. She said it would help people to understand and give me a wide berth. I took it, but I didn't like it. I wasn't blind, not in that way. It didn't feel right. The city was unbelievably, colossally noisy, and it stank. Every meter we took down the sidewalk was filled with so much oral information it became too acute. And I asked Jerry to take me somewhere quieter where I could sit and get my bearings, just for a minute or so. We crossed a big road. There was lots of shouting and car horns being punched, and then she guided me to a bench, and I sat and fell into my big white and tried to catch my breath. There was the constant hum of traffic, and in the sky, sometimes, rotor blades. I looked to my left, and there was Jerry, or more accurately, Jerry's outline, her black silhouette stark against the whiteness, as she lit up a cigarette. I couldn't see the cigarette, but I guessed from the movement of her hand and the smell what she was doing. I asked her for one too, and she said she didn't think it would work, or that I needed to ask the doctor or something, so I let it go. I sat back on the bench and asked her what was there in front of me. I asked her to describe it. and that was a big mistake. She started with the outlines of the buildings, the skyscrapers, and as she detailed their roof gardens and mirrored fascias, they appeared in the white as if being drawn by some magical giant etch-a-sketch. Whole buildings grew into the whiteness, and it was populated, crowded with streets and trees and people and cars, very quickly, as she described them, and they were moving and full of colour, and it was like a waterfall of visual information pouring in, much, much too quickly. Fascinating, but I had to turn away, and I looked to my left and to Jerry, and she wasn't a silhouette anymore. She was in full colour, and she was hideous. Her nose and eyes were mispositioned and wrongly shaped, and so was her giant lolling head, and her tongue rolled onto her chest. And where her hand should have been, there were bloody stumps, and she moved towards me, looking like a mutant, and with the sound of a paramedic siren in my ears and the sense of a prick of a hypodermic in my arm, I stopped again. I elected complete shutdown, and for a long time that time, I needed a complete break. It's much safer now. Jerry has been banished. I haven't made anyone at the facility real. It's safer that way. Neither do I bring the walls or bed or fittings into reality either. Instead, I spend each day in the simulator. And the doctors control the environments. Yes, it's much safer that way. I go to the coast, or walk in the mountains, or in the happy city, and sometimes off-planet. And no harm can befall me. No mutants. No unsettling visions. The landscapes and the soundscapes are benign. This is the world I've agreed to. This is the reality created for me. And I trust my doctor, my God.